Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 242.
This week on the podcast, the French presidential elections are three parts funny farm, two parts nonsense, and one part unpredictable margin of error.
And Trump's first 100 days are so annoying, we might be willing to settle for a wall-related government shutdown.
Plus, the DNC Unity Tour kicks off with protests and pro-lifers.
And Joel Osteen doppelganger John Ossoff might have more fun being radically boring on the pulpit than the soapbox.
Plus, Hollywood friends, Jason Chaffetz is on the hunt for a better paying job and willing to leave office to betray the people of Utah for a TV show contract.
And if Bill O'Reilly's fiction is any indication, women everywhere better watch their backs.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
You guys, Brent has turned me on to this whole France election situation.
Yes.
And as much as we hate foreign news, right, we love electoral politics.
Yeah.
And this is proving to be the most exciting kind of electoral politics.
This French election, I had been hearing about it and sort of like aggressively not caring about it.
Sure.
And then sort of, I don't know how, just became alerted to specific things and then really fell down a rabbit hole. And guys, it's amazing. The whole thing is fascinating.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It sounds like the first Cuomo race.
That's exactly
of
what
New
it
York
is.
State
yeah,
lore.
Totally.
The rent is too damn high party.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it sounds like there's 1,000
yeah.
candidates.
There
it's a jungle primary style situation.
Right. So the top two, if nobody gets 50%, which there's no way to get 50% because
there's
like 700 people
yeah.
running, all of them in the debates, by the way.
Yeah.
The last debate was over 3 hours long and each candidate only got like 17 minutes or something like that, including, you know, the ones who were like, no, but they had like
the
a
random
Ford
nobodies.
Factory worker and they had like, I mean, they had all these people who were just like not like actual people who were ever going to get more than like 0.01% of the vote. But
they got their 17
genius.
Minutes.
They sure
that's
did.
That's good television.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. That's two more than you're supposed to get.
Exactly.
You're supposed to get 15.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so nobody, of course, we got the results today.
Yes.
So,
and they're still coming in. We don't have final
right,
results.
They're not final results, but we do know who is advancing.
We know who's advancing,
yeah.
yes.
And between the top four vote getters, they were only separated by 4%.
Because yeah, the race kind of separated into four top vote getters, only
yeah.
one of which is an establishment guy,
yeah.
three of which are either wingnuts or randos.
Yeah. And that was the thing. Like, the French journalists, when the results came in today, I saw something on CNN that was like, it's a political earthquake. Because, like, both of the two...
How many of these are we going to have this year?
I know, right? Well, and that's sort of the thing. I mean, it really falls in line with
yeah,
the
whole world
with the Brexit.
Crazy.
It falls in line with Trump's
the
victory.
Trumpistan.
Although, in a head-to-head matchup, it does seem like the one, like, closest thing to an establishment person will win, but it also seemed like that in our election. So
right.
there's literally no way to know what's
Nate
going to
Silver
happen.
Nate Silver says that, and it's like, what does Nate Silver know anymore?
No,
Nate
right?
Silver was 99% sure Hillary
right.
Clinton was going to become our president.
Yeah, exactly.
There were some shockwaves, though, earlier in the week because there was a terrorist attack in Paris
yes.
on the Champs-Élysées. And so everyone thought, oh my God, this is going to be red meat for the, you know,
and
or Le Pen or whatever.
And she did.
She's the daughter of the
right,
sort of original
National Front
National
leader.
Front
and
leader.
They're nuts.
They're crazy people.
They're crazies.
They're
yeah,
crazy
exactly.
nuts. Yeah.
So, and she was helped a little bit by it. Everybody seemed to think that she was probably going to be, that she was going to get into the top two, but she ended up almost tying. But
yeah.
the two top vote getters basically were both at 23%, and then third and fourth were tied at like 19%.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she advanced, and she's from the National Front. She's nuts. She's
super nationalist, very Trump style,
right,
populist, crazy.
Yes, she's
anti everyone.
Railing
who's not
against
a
the
white
elites.
French person.
Right, exactly.
Anti the elites.
Right. There's definitely going to be at least an attempt at Frexit if she gets
yes.
nominated. She's very much in favor of, you know, closing down the borders. She wants the Muslims to not be able to wear their traditional head.
Right.
You
that's
know,
always a big item of controversy
in
France.
France.
For some reason, everyone's
right.
very anti-hijab.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that's her.
Yeah.
And she's definitely
she's like Donald
Trump
bananas. On steroids, though,
yeah.
because she comes from an actual political tradition.
Yes,
whereas
exactly.
Donald Trump just comes from his own head.
Right, exactly.
And he came up with all of his nationalist
right.
rhetoric
yeah. and
on the
National
spot.
Front has been around for a while.
Yeah.
Like you said, her father started it. But they have never, I think, he advanced to the runoff, I think, once. And it
yeah.
was like in the 70s or something. So they're not really.
He's been a fixture, though, in the politics there because
yes.
he's because
right.
we're always caring about who he's dating.
Right. But that party has never really been a thing.
No.
In the sense
well,
that,
crazy.
Like, well, right, exactly. They've never been a thing in the sense that, like, anyone had a real fear that they were going to win anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So the other person who advanced is Macron, and he is...
Very bizarre story here.
Right. He is... Yeah, he's definitely an interesting case. He is, like, fashioning himself as a progressive, but, like, in the way
In the New
that,
Democrats.
In the New Democrats way.
Definition right, of progressive. He's a progressive. And Hillary Clinton's
right.
progressive.
He's a progressive because he's uniting the left and the right. And right. he sort of is like a...
That's the wrong definition of progressive.
Right, exactly. He's a former investment banker. Mm-hmm. But he also worked in the first Hollande administration. So he's a former socialist. But he has never... been elected to anything. He's not really. He's been in politics, but he has never been like a politician.
You know
and
what's
he does
so
not
interesting?
He does not belong to a political party. He made up his own political party like less than a year ago.
What's so interesting is that their business candidate and their political establishment candidate are in the opposite places as they were like from our race, where yes. our establishment candidate who had been part of politics since the moment you know she came out of the womb was. Our sort of centrist candidate and then our crazy businessman wacko.
Yeah.
I feel like this is the more likely scenario because who can run a successful business with Donald Trump-like tendencies? Nobody,
right. yeah.
including Donald Trump.
Right. Totally.
But this is interesting because it's going to be, it's a similar kind of matchup, but it's not quite the same because
no.
the one person who really could affect change in this scenario, I suspect, is Le Pen.
Yes, probably. Yeah.
And that's not what you want.
No, it's
you
not.
Don't want the Trumpian person to be to the be, one who can affect change.
Right, exactly. Well, and that I think is what, you know, that's ultimately what happened here.
Yeah.
So
when well, there were some interesting articles also about, because in France they have like actual polling places you can go to if you live abroad. So there was a polling place in Brooklyn where like a bunch of French people got together and like wore resist t-shirts and shit like that. And were like, and all of them were very distraught because they couldn't figure out who to vote for because everyone seemed... like a terrible idea because it was just like three Looney Tunes and a nut job.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you know, the only person who really seemed like they were and early on they were a shoo-in is Fillon. And he is the former prime minister and he sort of is like from the center right party. And they often advance. It many times in France it ends up being the center right party and the socialists who are running in
that
the presidential
like
election.
Very
with
European.
Each other. Totally. And he also sort of like his politics kind of like fall in line with where it seems like France is right now. He's a Catholic, so he's very much into sort of like he ran a campaign on sort of like, you know, traditional French values. But he's also sort of like an economic socialist, nearly anyway.
Right.
I mean, so he everybody
That's
sort of
classic
thought that he,
European
right.
move
to, right.
when you're conservative in Europe. I feel like you're not conservative in the American sense of like
not.
Evangelical Christianity.
No.
You're like conservative because you want to keep Muslims out.
Right, exactly. So he, but he unfortunately, and I think that this just sort of like added to the whole sort of like anti-establishment because he's really the only, you know, quote unquote establishment person in this race. And he got mired in a scandal fairly recently where he had, it was reported that he had paid his wife hundreds of thousands of euros for like some like mysterious parliamentary work that she had done for him where it turns out she
hadn't done anything.
Done literally one thing.
Except make money.
Except make hundreds
public
of thousands of euros.
Public taxpayer money.
Yeah, it was public money.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't him just paying her. It was,
no.
Yeah, it was public money. So he sort of took a real hit from that because I think the conventional wisdom for a while was that he was one of the shoo-ins. He's the former prime minister.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's...
And was the only legitimate person in
right.
a quad... I was going to say trio, but it's a quadrangle.
No, it's quad. Well, and really even... Five, whatever you call that, because the fifth person,
right,
while
was,
he is from one of their traditional parties, was elected as sort of like an outsider from that party,
right.
And we'll get to him in just a little bit. But the fourth person, who is my favorite person, and
yeah.
because
well,
obviously
best.
He would be, is it's this guy. His name's Mélenchon,
mm-hmm.
and he is from the hard left party. Also
yeah.
used to be a socialist. A lot of former socialists.
A lot of angry Hollande
former
people.
Folks, yeah. So he had a falling out with Hollande. And then
classic
wanted there to be a stronger voice from further on the left. So he has sort of like fashioned himself as like that. He compares himself sometimes to General Mao. He's compared himself to Hugo Chavez. He's compared himself to Bernie Sanders. It sort of just depends on whatever his mood is.
Right.
I think
it's
at
bizarre
the time.
List.
Right. He's been.
I feel like I would argue that Mao and Bernie Sanders don't belong on the
no,
same
I
list, even though they
agree.
Both they both fall on the left somewhere.
Right. Yeah. But he has been endorsed by the French Communist Party. He's not running as the communist candidate. But so he is like a real – and he had a huge surge in the polls recently. So there were a lot of people who, at least as of like even yesterday, and he did do pretty well, that were thinking that it could be Le Pen, who was like far right wacko loon bag, versus the, you know, France's General Mao.
Right.
It didn't end up that way. That would have been delicious.
What a race. Just,
you know,
what a race.
Yeah. That's what I was hoping for, just well, for so, entertainment yeah. purposes.
I mean, the world's ending anyway. Why not entertain ourselves on the way out?
Exactly. Yes. But anyway, so he is sort of like...
He's a little bit of an internet celebrity.
He is, yeah. Well, and the reason that he sort of had the surge was because everybody... He's, like, kind of known as, like, you know, this a great orator, and he... Most everyone agreed that he won all of the debates. Right. So he sort of, like, has had a quick surge of late in the polls.
He made those 17 minutes count.
He really made those 17 minutes count, yes. He also created some buzz when he appeared at some rallies as a hologram, you guys.
He's a rock star.
He's amazing.
He's Tupac.
So, yes, yeah, totally. So he's brilliant, but he also sort of, like, railed against, like, the leftist establishment, because their president right now is a socialist, so he's, like, railing, like, against the left from further to the left, which is a real treat in my book.
Of course.
Yeah.
You got it. And so, interestingly, considering that their current president is a socialist, the socialist candidate was running in a sad fifth.
Sad fifth, yeah.
In this race.
And nobody in France likes Hollande right now. Literally no one. So the socialists sort of, like, knew that and nominated this sort of nobody, just assuming that they would come in fifth, and that's exactly what happened. Well, I don't know if they assumed they would come in fifth, but they knew that they weren't probably going to advance into the runoff.
They knew that their platform would involve taxing robots.
Right, which it does.
Which it does.
Yeah, so, and I'm in favor of that.
Yeah.
I mean, also, it sounds ridiculous, but it was one of those things where, like, he was sort of, his platform was all about preparing further for globalization and also, you know, for robots to be taking over jobs from actual humans. Yeah. And so the reason that he wanted to tax the robots was so that he could guarantee everyone
a basic human wage
because he was afraid that everybody is soon to be out of work to be replaced by robots. So he wanted to tax the shit out of robots. So it sounds sort of crazy when you say it aloud, but then when you sort of think of the rationale behind it, it also isn't that ridiculous. But anyway, so he, like, crazy, like, fifth place, I think in single digits, actually. So, yeah. But yeah, three of the
four candidates
are,
sad day for the Socialist Party. Like, a fun day for news, though.
Yeah.
And
the runoff is coming up pretty quick, so.
And according to Nate Silver, who, again, nobody should trust because he bungled his own country's presidential race, Macron leads Le Pen by 26 points in polls.
Right, in head-to-head.
But what if it's Hillary, the 2017 version, where 26 points actually turns out to be 2 points in the other direction?
Right.
And then, you know.
Well, and what I think could end up being, I have
craziness.
A feeling it'll be much closer than that, because I think what will ultimately end up happening is that this will be, you know, people know that Le Pen and the National Front are sort of crazies. But also, we talked about this during Brexit, is that Frexit is more popular in France when polled than Brexit ever was in England when polled.
And there's nothing the French like less than letting the British do something first.
Right.
So, totally. Like, this has got to be infuriating to them.
Yeah.
Because now they're stuck with all this dead weight, like these, you know, these countries that are just one step above a developing country, that they're floating the economy, and they have Germany as the big power.
Right.
And they're like, fuck Germany, we hate Germany. Yeah. And now the British were like, fine, we've washed our hands of it.
Right.
And the French are probably like, you
wait a minute.
Assholes.
I know. We wanted
we
to
were
do
gonna
that.
Do that.
I know, yeah. So it really could, it seems like it could, she could become, you know, the face of that, almost like it doesn't even matter who she is on some levels.
Yeah.
You know, like it just, she will.
No,
so,
I mean, Trump
I can't imagine.
Became the face of something without a consistent policy or any ideas or any rational reason for thinking he could do anything.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't see why a known political entity wouldn't be able to pull off the same thing
in
France.
I mean, she may very well lose, but, like, I would be fully shocked if she lost by 26 points, which is what the polling head-to-head is right now. I just don't... I can't imagine that actually happens.
Yeah.
So, keep your eye on that, man. It's only a couple
weeks.
Exciting
times.
Yeah.
Can Europe ever just get their shit together, by the way?
No.
I know that we hate everyone in America all the time, but we have had, like, one civil war in the time that they have caused, like, two world wars and several non-world wars. Like, I get that things aren't going great here.
Yeah.
But, like, They are a mess.
Total mess.
They think that they're like the height of civilization.
Right? I know.
And they're busy. Like, they've caused every political chaos that's ever happened in any country in the world. And they can't even get their own shit together.
Like, Britain has gone to shit. It seems like France might be on its way to going to shit. It's like, and
the Mediterranean's been in shit this whole time.
I mean, and we've talked about this a million times. Like, but we can't be having Germany run the show over there.
No.
Like, that's not what you're looking for.
The last time they tried that, it worked out very poorly for a lot of people like myself.
I know. Oh, God.
You guys.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. Well, and they, you know, as an update from the British Brexit front, they have their own situation going on because Theresa May just called snap elections to basically, like, improve her party's majority in the parliament so that she could pass their Brexit deal more easily.
That's,
So they're going to hold elections on June 8th.
That this seems just like a dicey proposition.
Like, didn't Erdogan just do this so he could become a dictator? Like, I mean, I feel like calling snap elections is never a move for a totally, you know, on the up and up responsible politician.
I agree. I also, where Erdogan did that, I think there was, first off, there's also sort of like a lot of,
That was Turkey.
That was Turkey. And there are also sort of like, I think, stories of late that are seeming like maybe that election wasn't as on the up and up as
I wouldn't be surprised to hear that.
Which is not shocking to hear. But I think, and we were just talking about this right before the podcast started, but like,
when we have all of our best conversations.
This, to me, seems like a real recipe for disaster, at least as far as Theresa May's own, like, situation goes.
But they have a situation going on there, which is that their Labour Party did the same thing our Democratic Party did, leaned on a very conservative platform in the last 20 years, and is now in, like, pure shambles.
Yeah.
Like, their Labour Party is a mess. So their only, like, major opposition party is polling, like, in the 20s, and they're polling in the 40s, which, you know, in a multi, you know, a parliamentary system is a pretty big deal and a large gap. So, I mean, there's, you know, maybe Labour could get their shit together, but Labour is facing an identity crisis just like the Democratic Party is here, where they don't have shit to get together at the moment because no one knows who they are. And, you know, they have this very, you know, the risk of this, I think, is that, you know, she has started negotiations with Brussels. But, and Parliament has to approve whatever deal she makes with them for Brexit. So she needs enough of a majority of her own party. And she's getting some shit from her own party over this deal as well, because as we know, Brexit was not a clear cut party, you know, thing. But she is trying to pack, you know, is trying to pack the backbench basically with supporters so that she can get this deal passed.
Yeah, she wants a stronger hand in negotiations.
Exactly. There's a risk that the people that voted for Brexit are not going to be happy with the terms that she's, you know, negotiating on. And in that case, because let's be honest, half of Britain voted jokingly for Brexit.
Well, that's what
half
I was
of them
say.
Didn't actually know what Brexit was when they voted for it.
We heard all of these stories about, like, and you could, and this in the same way that France could turn into sort of like whether they want to do Frexit or not, where you could see sort of Le Pen being the face of that. It seems like this election, and yes, the polls are good for May's party right now, but it does seem like, you know, this could, if this turns into sort of like a referendum on Brexit again, which it seems like it could, that's why I said it, at least to me, it seems like it could be dicey, because, like, first off, that vote was close anyway. And if all of the people that we heard stories about, you know,
regretting their vote immediately.
Regretting their vote. If this turns into sort of like basically the sort of a re-Brexit vote,
thing I will say about that is that part of the strategy of the anti-Brexit people was to say that the economy would fall apart and everything would fall, you know, everything would fall to shambles immediately. And the economy didn't fall apart and everything is sort of the same. Now, that's probably because they haven't left yet. But I mean, all of these dire predictions have not really come to pass yet. And I think they probably will. But this election is going to happen before they have a chance to do that. And so I think the people that, you know, that David Cameron scared into not voting for Brexit who are angry about whatever, you know, like, might not feel as loyal to a scattered party that has no because what, like, Labour doesn't have an agenda, so, like, what are they going to campaign on? Like, not Brexit.
I mean, maybe.
I mean, I guess, but, like, those, that is never, you know, you can't you can't campaign on not being Donald Trump. You can't be, you can't campaign on not something. You have to have a platform. You have to say, like, okay, we're going to stay in the EU, and here's what we'll do to make your life better. And, like, if they don't have anything to say because they're not sure what they stand for, then they're not going to offer, and this doesn't give them much time to organize, which is, I think, part of why she's doing this instead of waiting until the, you know, the actual elections would happen. The only thing I will say, because I agree that it's risky.
Yeah.
I think it's never a good sign when someone calls snap elections. Yeah. Unless a major act of treason has happened. Unless, you know, unless there's some extenuating circumstance where it's in the interest of the nation to find new leadership immediately and do it democratically.
Yeah.
So that it's not just like Mike Pence who becomes the president.
Right.
Like, I feel like any leader who calls snap elections just to give themselves a mandate to do something that's very controversial in their own country is suspect.
Agreed.
At the least.
Yeah.
Also, she had said before that she would not do this.
She has gone
on the record saying that she would oppose calling snap elections. Mm-hmm, and then she was suddenly like, or maybe I would like to be more powerful. You know, like, that's not what
all
you want.
All powerful. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In any case, back to the U.S.
Yes.
Where things are going as predicted.
Yeah.
The end of the 100 days is not
coming up.
It's on Saturday. And I personally cannot wait until the 100 days, the first 100 days of Trump's term end, because it has been exhausting, and I'm hoping that the pressure will be off after the 100 days to get anything done, and they can just go take naps like they've wanted to this whole time.
Right. Well, because, you know, they said that they were going to do all of these things in 100 days, and they've done
none
not
of
one thing.
Remember when we were going to repeal the Affordable Care Act on the first day?
Mm-hmm, I do.
And that has really...
No.
That's really not panned out.
They're going to try and do it between the 93rd and the 100th.
That's right. There's a few things happening before Saturday.
Yeah.
One of which is that the White House really wants to have another vote to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act.
The first vote.
Well, the first vote. Right. They again want to have the first vote to do this.
Yes.
Now, the problem is that there is still no bill for the replace portion.
Right. They're panic writing right now.
Well, of course they are.
Like, they've spent the weekend.
What's this deal going to be?
Well, because there's some
camps that need to be satisfied.
Right, exactly. Supposedly there's like some sort of, what I have heard anyway, is that they're going to allow states to like opt out of allowing people with pre-existing conditions to like get the Obamacare, but then like allowing them like some sort of like going back to like some sort of high risk pool. It's basically like a... Like, there's some like, general agreed-upon language, supposedly, is what I've heard.
I feel like that's what you say until your phone calls come in.
I agree. Yeah.
Because who's in high-risk pools?
Well, and the House might pass that. But
Sick, poor people.
Again, the Senate doesn't have the votes to pass that. I don't think.
I would highly doubt it.
Yeah.
You'd be signing a death warrant for the entire Republican Party. That would be a terrible idea for all of them.
Yeah.
And Ryan doesn't really want to deal with this now. Because it's causing fucking chaos in the House.
Yeah.
They don't have the votes. It's embarrassing everyone.
I was going to say, every time that this gets re-brought back up, I'm sure he's being like, guys,
this
just,
is
no.
embarrassing.
This is, right.
This is embarrassing for us. We're being bullied by 40 idiots who have their own party that are claiming they're our party.
Right.
We have a group idiotically named the Tuesday Group that's going around opposing the Freedom Caucus. All of these things sound silly.
Yep.
And we don't have the votes.
Yeah.
Because we're bad at leadership. We don't have any good leadership.
Yeah.
Because Steve Bannon thinks it's a good idea to go in there and just threaten them all to vote for things as if the Freedom Caucus can be threatened.
Can't.
It can't be. But the other thing that's got to happen before Saturday is we need a budget because the government's going to shut down if we don't.
Oh, boy.
So,
and guess what's going to be in this budget?
The wall.
The wall. Remember when Mexico was going to pay for that?
I do.
We were going to get rich on the wall.
Yeah. I remember when that was not going to cost U.S. taxpayers a cent.
Well, it's going to cost us all the cents because it's going to be in this budget and it might shut down the government.
It might shut down the government.
Delicious.
So on Saturday, the budget expires.
Yep.
They have been passing sort of stopgap budgets, and I was expecting them to do the same.
It's a classic maneuver.
It's a classic maneuver. Since October, we've had no real budget.
Yeah.
And so they need to make a budget deal.
Mm-hmm.
They have promised, House leadership, like Ryan and a bunch of other House leadership, have promised they're going to keep the government open. That I wouldn't trust them as far as I could throw them ever, because they haven't fulfilled any single thing they've promised since the beginning of this, you know, term.
Yeah.
But hilariously, Nick Mulvaney is trying to push them to do both the Affordable Care Act and the budget thing in 1 week and thinks that it's totally doable. And it's all because Trump hits his 100-day mark.
Right.
And so they're all trying to pack the last week. But I would contend that this is not the best time to bring Obamacare up, because all it does is stoke discontent at a time when you really want to look like you're able to keep the government open.
Right, exactly, yes.
And especially if, you know, you're, like, they can try to confuse us by doing the Obamacare thing the same week as the wall thing.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to confuse the like Congress with two pieces of legislation that are, you know, terrible. Not.
And neither of those things are things that the country wants us to do. The wall probably may be closer to, but also, like, people voted for Trump because he was claiming that Mexico was going to pay for it. So when they
want to pay for the wall?
So when they find out that the budget is getting passed with, you know, $20 billion worth of money or however much it's going to be for a wall, then, like, that's not going to be super...
Also, is the wall keeping out any of the people they're really trying to keep out?
Well.
The wall is not keeping out Syrians. You know, like, the wall is not keeping out their racist fever dream people.
Yeah, well, they have those with Mexicans, too.
They have those with Mexicans, too. But, I mean, like, this is a lot of money to pay for something that doesn't really solve a problem.
Right, exactly.
And
yes.
It's one thing to be like, yeah, free wall? Why not?
Yeah.
It's another thing to be like, wait a minute.
Yeah, we're not
I'm taxed at this percent. I'm taxed at 22%, and half of that's going, you know, like...
Or all of these cuts to programs that I actually use.
All of these cuts to programs that I use are going to pay for this dumb wall?
Yeah. Oh, boy.
These people don't want to play the long game.
If I were a betting man, I would bet on failure of both of these things.
Yes.
Which is amazing.
You guys.
I mean, I would like the government to stay open, but certainly not at the expense of building a fucking wall.
No.
I mean.
No. And I think, you know, I think that there will be people for whom this is not a transparent policy, but I think for anyone who is like half reasonable, trying to force a wall into a you know, it's going to be like the time that their plans to shut down the government over Obamacare failed. They got blamed for that.
Totally.
The Democrats did
not. They'll get blamed for this,
too. Blamed for, yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It doesn't make them look like we should have any confidence in them. And considering they can't get any legislation passed, it doesn't add anything to their, it doesn't make them look tough.
And supposedly they've offered the Democrats some deal about, like, they'll continue to fund Obamacare if they'll fund the wall. And, like, Chuck Schumer was like, all right, go buzz off.
Literally,
like,
no. That's not a deal.
Like, the deliberations are done and they haven't been started. Like,
it's not a deal.
It's not.
That's like me offering you the shirt that you're already wearing.
Right, exactly.
In exchange for me getting to cut your head off.
Yeah, like that, we'll let 24 million Americans not die in exchange for, you know, building a, you know, billions
not
and billions
die
of dollars
in our name. Right. Like,
yeah, it's not. That's not a winning
deal. That's not a deal.
It's not a deal.
They're not good negotiators.
There's no art to that deal.
No. That's one thing we've learned about the Trump world is that they don't have much art to their deals or many deals to their deals because they're bad at deal making.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Trump's polling heading into the end of his 100 days is low, but not low enough.
No, it should be low.
96% of Trump voters said they would vote for him again.
No.
But a majority of Americans say Trump doesn't understand their problems, is not trustworthy, and is not guided by a clear set of principles.
Well, duh.
But that means that some of these people think that and also would vote for him again.
Yeah. Right.
Another problem is that more Americans than last, I guess, month are saying that Democrats are out of step with the public.
Oh.
They feel the same about the GOP.
Right.
But it's more concerning, I think, for the Democrats who are trying to win back a bunch of voters.
Exactly. Yeah.
The GOP has them right now.
Yeah.
And they're not where they should be.
No, that's not great.
Maybe that is why it's so concerning that the Tom Perez Bernie Sanders unity tour is headed off. It's not off to a rocky start.
At best.
At the very best.
Yeah. It has not been good at all.
You guys.
Perez is getting booed at most of the events.
I don't know what they thought was going to happen on this tour.
Because obviously everybody is going to see Bernie Sanders because that's what
nobody's going to see Tom Perez.
And nobody who is going to see Bernie Sanders likes Tom Perez.
Exactly.
So, like, this is, I mean, this is a sort of like 1+1=2 type of situation
they've had their head in the sand about how angry progressives are at the Democratic Party for too long.
Yeah, I bet Tom Perez is shocked that he's going around
getting booed.
Yeah.
Because he's progressive too, Brent. They're all progressive. Everyone in the Democratic Party is progressive. The whole party is the most progressive party in the whole history of the world, except for that they're moderate Republicans for the most part, and they don't have any respect for what progressivism as people who self-report themselves to be progressive is.
Yeah.
So in any case, they've been facing half-empty halls. They're not even packing the halls, which is too bad because Bernie Sanders alone can pack a hall. Anti-DNC chants interrupting their speeches. They have a lot of angry Bernie supporters, like, coming up with, you know, new and inventive ways to disrupt the proceedings. They've been to Maine, Kentucky, Florida, Texas, Nebraska, Utah, Arizona, and Nevada.
Yep.
Many of those swing states or states where there should be sizable blue pools of people. And
and aren't.
And well, there are, but they're finding that those pools of blues are Bernie blues. They're not DNC blues.
Well, I'm hoping that that's becoming clear.
It's not going to become clear to them, Brent. Let's give up hope. Okay. Let's not dream.
I should.
At all big.
All right.
Let's dream small and hope that Tom Perez thinks to himself, just like, maybe I should take a backseat role in this whole operation.
God, seriously.
Because his whole stated goal here is to get in the room with these people and really get the trust back.
Yeah.
But he's not really parroting anything except the plan that we can all be against Trump together.
Yeah.
It doesn't take voting for the DNC to be against Trump, you guys.
No, it doesn't.
That really false doesn't. Equivalency is it's a uniquely American idea. Right. But if France has taught us anything, it's that those are not equivalent things.
Yeah.
You can belong to almost any crazy pants party and be against Le Pen.
Yeah. Exactly.
There are four crazy pants parties that you can join to be against Le Pen. Right.
Yeah.
Some of which are fashioning themselves in holograms as the Mao of France. And that, you know, that doesn't mean that you are for centrist policies.
No, it doesn't. But, you know, they had that interview with Chris Hayes where Bernie took some flack for saying that he wasn't a Democrat because Chris Hayes asked him.
Right. And he's not.
He's not. But B, the fact that he is not a Democrat and is out there attempting to
win votes,
save
the
party, ultimately.
Yeah.
Like, don't get mad at him for saying in an interview with Chris Hayes that he's not a Democrat, because he's out there with Tom Perez, who's the loser head of the DNC, trying to fix everything. So it's like, buzz off, everybody. Like,
also, these sort of demands for party loyalty above, you know, the party having respect for their voters are too much for me.
Yeah.
That those kind of scare tactics are not going to work with voters.
Yeah.
You know, I've been meaning to write something about this. I've just been too lazy.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I think that and this is something we talked about last week, I think, where the mentality that the Democrats should be using as a party that has lost every chamber of government is the party that we are competing against is not Donald Trump. It is staying at home.
Yeah.
The voting is the party that we're competing against, because that's the real choice their voters are making.
Yeah.
It's between showing up for them or not. So instead of thinking, how can we disgrace the other candidate and how can we show people that their only choice is to vote for us because the other guy is terrible?
It's terrible.
They need to show us why it's worth getting off our couches for them.
Exactly.
And that is a different sale.
Yeah.
And they are not trying to make that sale.
No, we,
they
yeah,
are
we
trying
talked about
to
this
position
in our story
themselves
last week.
In opposition to a party that doesn't even make any sense as a thing.
Exactly. Well, and they also in this Chris Hayes interview, they sort of like asked what they should be doing in elections. And Bernie, I think, sort of like did his usual sort of like, you know, anti-establishment. They should be, you know, running people with progressive agendas and blah, blah, blah. And Tom Perez sort of like would not commit to that and was like, Democrats win when we put hope on the ballot. And it's like that, like, I get that, like, that.
That worked for Obama because he was an inspiring speaker and a historic presidency and also an unknown quantity who had no political baggage. And, you know, I mean,
hope is not a.
That's not a policy.
It's not a concrete thing to, like, take to
and
people.
Also, this is the thing that we are now running against, is the fact that people voted for hope and they didn't have it at the end of 8 years.
Yeah.
You know, there were a lot of places that went for Obama that ended up going for Trump. And it wasn't, it was about lost hope, essentially.
Yeah.
Because they had defined hope by whatever they thought. And they felt hopeful, too. We all felt hopeful.
Yeah.
And there were some ways in which our hope was rewarded. But there were other ways, economic ways, in which our hope was not rewarded for almost anyone.
Right.
So I feel like if that's the real thing that we are sort of running against at this point, is how we disappointed, you know, our... How we disappointed our voters with a vague agenda, basically.
Yeah.
Like, but Bernie Sanders is making people choose between staying at home and not staying at home.
Yeah.
He's forcing people to make that choice because they are thinking to themselves, I would get off the couch for someone like Bernie.
Right, exactly. Well, and that's the thing I'm reading.
And anything that disrespects that and tries to posit it like these aren't loyal Democrats and so we don't have to consider their agenda and all of these things is, I think, just full of total shit.
Right. Well, and I'm reading Shattered right now, which is amazing.
Oh,
and
God,
I'm not that far into it. But basically, like, what they have sort of, like, presented as the overarching theme of that campaign, besides the classic sort of, like, infighting and power struggles that, like, any campaign has, but especially sort of, like, in Clinton world, who has sort of, like, you know,
a reputation for this.
For a reputation of this and sort of, like, 40 years of, like, you know, personal confidants who are sort of like, you know,
yeah, have shuffling direct ears in and out.
Was that they, from the beginning, struggled and sort of blamed the candidate herself for, like, not being able to, like, effectively present a reason for, like, why people should vote for her, why she wanted to be president, was, and from the opening speech on Roosevelt Island, it was a problem, and it really never got fixed. Yeah. I mean, it really didn't. Like, no one knew why they were supposed to be voting for her. People did, obviously. 3 million more people did than voted for Trump. But if you were to ask any of those however many tens of millions of people voted for her, I would have a feeling you'd probably have trouble finding a handful of people that could tell you, like, concisely why they did so.
Yeah.
And that was...
And many of them that would have told you concisely would have said she's an inspiring figure.
Right.
Or something like that. Yeah, right. Well, Margaret Thatcher was an inspiring figure for women, but I wouldn't have voted for her.
Yeah, Donald Trump was an inspiring figure for racist
for many racist white men out in the world.
Right,
you know?
Exactly, yeah.
And women, turned out.
Yeah, so that is not, it's not a winning strategy.
No.
It's basically what that was.
No, and it doesn't, in like many things with the way that the DNC has been run and the way the Clinton world has been run, it's a sort of greedy strategy politically because it doesn't create movement opportunities.
Yeah.
It doesn't create grassroots energy. It doesn't sort of carry over. We don't have a backbench. We don't have anything.
Yeah.
And it's because there's no room in the vague strategy of hope we were pursuing for new people to get excited about the process and get into the process.
Yeah.
There were new people that came in with Obama because he was new and he was young. And those it was all new sort of faces to Washington who had, you know, different levels of experience on the fringes of Washington.
Right.
But
even the Obamas really sort of like left the DNC to sort of like flounder for a long time.
Yeah. And I would contend that during that time, it was the DNC's job to figure out how to create and maintain the grassroots energy that campaign had started. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz was not up to the job.
Right.
You guys.
No, she wasn't. Before we move on, we need to take both of them to task for going to campaign loser in Omaha. And also explain to you why they shouldn't have done that. Besides the fact that we shouldn't be campaigning for anti-choice candidates at all.
Right.
But I heard a quote from Bernie, and I really wish that he... You know, he, as we talked about multiple times throughout the campaign, he was further to the left than Hillary on women's rights issues.
Yeah.
But I think he sort of, so they went, that there's this candidate for mayor in Omaha that they went to go campaign for. Right. This was one of the stops on the, and he sort of used to be in the state legislature and was very, you know, pro-life, anti-choice. Anyway, but I heard a quote from, I think it was actually Bernie, who was sort of like, well, you know, he's running on a real platform of... economic progressivism and blah, 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 blah. And, like, it needs to be, and I'm sure he knows this on some level, but it seems like he maybe needs to be reminded, and maybe you need to be reminded too, but abortion and economics are...
They go hand in hand.
Tied, directly to each other.
Yeah.
I mean, in a very, very serious way.
Giving women agency over their own lives is one of the ways you can improve their economic situation.
100%. And forcing them to have a child when they are perhaps economically, you know, not suited to do so is certainly not economic progressivism.
No.
So they both need to...
And why is this tour visiting any pro-life candidates?
Don't go there.
Don't do that. That
doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense.
No. So I'm mad at the both of them.
Yeah.
And I rarely get mad at Dear Bernie.
No, but I mean, these, as they, who they visit on this tour is important.
Of course.
And what values they project are important, especially as they are trying, against all odds, to build some sort of grassroots energy and movement. And, the kinds of voters that they hope to bring into the campaign by having a non-Democrat, Bernie Sanders, you know, on the road with them are not going to be, sort of, able to stomach this kind of support. And also I am only interested in talking about lifestyle issues as they pertain to sort of larger conversations about equality and economic stability.
Totally.
And so while it doesn't affect men personally that much if women can or cannot have abortions, unless they're responsible people.
Sure.
unless when their girlfriend is forced to have a child, they're willing to stick around.
Right. You have to be able to think of it as a larger...
You have to be able to think of it as an economic issue. Right, that is the difference. Of course, nobody... You know, if you're thinking of it in the terms of, well, murdering babies is bad, but I guess we can put that on the back burner, then of course you're upset about the idea of abortion. But if you think about it in terms of, a conversation that affects women's ability to participate fully in the world and also to make choices about their own lives yeah. that directly affect their pocketbooks and directly affect the pocketbooks of not just the people around them, but the children that they already have and things like yeah. that, then you are not thinking about this issue in a socially responsible way.
Yep.
And if we can't discuss it in a socially responsible way, and if we're going to ignore the social consequences of ignoring it, then we're being stupid.
Agreed. I'm with you.
Men.
God. The fucking worst. Men.
In any case, here's an update about Georgia.
Yeah, that was this week.
Remember our radically boring candidate,
yeah.
John Ossoff?
Yeah, well, he's headed to probably lose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because he received a much larger share of the vote, but it was in a jungle primary.
Right.
Where
he actually got less than all of the Republicans combined did,
yeah.
I believe.
He did.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But, I mean, he got 48.1%, so he was close right. to 50% of the yeah. vote anyway.
Yeah.
It's just that...
He got about what Hillary did.
Yeah. Right. I mean... Yeah. That's how many
right.
people are willing to vote for boring Democrats right. in that district.
Exactly.
Radically boring people.
But probably even less when it comes... Because this was a referendum on Trump.
Yes.
And it was never about John Ossoff. The problem for him in the runoff now is that this district has been Republican since the 70s because it's a Republican district, but not in the Trump Republicanism sort of way.
No, it's like white-collar Republicanism.
Right, they're in the, yeah, exactly. It's like an upper middle class,
like
suburb. Almost rich suburb. And, it's
filled with horrible white
right,
people
exactly.
who don't
and,
want...
And they, are, and they will vote for the mainstream Republican, and that is who won yeah. the yeah. That's who he's going to be running
Karen
against in the runoff.
Karen Handel, who... was the second vote-getter and is advancing into the runoff with him, yeah. is not liked by the Trump people, but that will probably
right.
help her in that
probably
district.
Yes.
And this is, Mitt
because
Romney...
Because Tom Price won by 20-some percent.
Mitt Romney won by 23 points yeah. in that district.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a district that is heavily boring yeah. kind, boring town Republican.
Yeah.
But
I'm glad the Democrats spent $8 million on that and not one single damn dime in that Kansas race, by the way.
I know. Yeah. There were...
Well, they're sending money to Montana, by the way.
Oh, they are.
The DCCC is.
Oh, well, somebody at
yeah.
least.
Anyway, yeah.
I mean,
sorry.
That,
side note, but.
That's good news, at least.
It is, yes.
Yeah, but I mean, there were millions spent on this race, but
right.
you can't rescue a candidate who's running on nothing,
nope.
really. I mean, it was an impressive turnout considering the
yeah.
makeup of the district, you
yeah.
know, and considering it was a special election, so it was happening off cycle and all, that's,
yeah.
But a lot of people are pretty convinced that he has reached his ceiling. Because there was, the most voter awareness there could have possibly
yeah,
been.
Totally.
And that the Republicans are probably going to be able to pick up some votes somewhere.
Oh, yeah. He got 48.1% in this jungle primary. And I would, again, if I were a betting man, I would bet a lot of money that he's not going to get even that much when it comes to the runoff. He's not going to get 48% in that runoff.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
No,
so,
I think that would be...
I mean, it would have been great for him to win outright. And,
yeah.
I was sort of... As it was coming up, I was telling you that I was having trouble making myself care. And then as soon as the results came in, I became
Brent.
I was an obsessed lunatic,
yeah.
Refreshing every single website every 4 seconds. So yes, I wanted him to win. Am I shocked that he didn't? No.
No, he was
am I
described
angry?
As radically boring.
I was going to say,
paper.
Am I angry that we spent so much money on this goober? Yes, I am.
I wouldn't be angry if we had been choosing to spend money on every goober instead
right.
of just goobers that are actual goobers.
Yeah.
If our plan was to spend money on every race that had looked like it might become competitive,
right.
then that would be one thing.
Yes.
But that's not what we've done here.
It's not.
We've
no.
put all of our eggs into a radically boring basket.
In a boring, moderate basket who wasn't running on anything for anyone. Again,
yeah.
this goes back to our point about what are you running on? This
yeah.
guy was running on... anti-Trumpism and government waste.
Yeah.
That's not...
Those aren't... what Democrat is showing up for government waste?
No. People who hate Trump.
Yeah.
That's it.
Those are Republicans.
But that's...
in that
right,
district.
Exactly, right. Exactly. Yes, it was.
In that district, those are the Republicans. And
yeah.
now they have a candidate.
Yeah.
So it's great.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, there was some very lame drama before we move on.
God.
Because Bernie Sanders said wouldn't call Ossoff a progressive.
Yeah, he got asked if Ossoff was a progressive. And he said, I don't know. And
then
everybody was like, oh, how dare he?
I need to have a conversation about the word progressive.
I mean, we've been trying to have it because we've been...
We said
it
when Hillary Clinton kept claiming that she was a progressive.
Right.
We're throwing that word around too much. And here's the thing. If if every Democrat wants to call themselves progressive,
that's fine.
Fine.
Start the Progressive Party, lose the name Democrats.
Yeah, do whatever you want to do.
And the Bernie Sanders people can become Democratic Socialists.
That doesn't erase that there's a distinction between these two wings of the party, and whether or not you're calling yourself progressive, if you're not representing the ideals of the left wing of the party, then at this moment in time, you are kind of causing a problem.
Yes. So, and you also don't get to call yourself a progressive just because you want to, because you know it's like politically beneficial right now.
The words only are 50% of the thing.
Here's,
you know, as I said to Brent, the fact that gays took back the word queer doesn't mean that there aren't homophobic people still out there. You know, like the ism doesn't disappear just because the word did.
Right. And you want to know what's so fascinating about this whole thing is that if you know that calling yourself progressive is beneficial to you, then might you just take up the actual policies of what a progressive would be?
Like,
it doesn't make sense to be a moderate and then, like, attempt to call yourself progressive because you know it's politically beneficial to you. Like, those things, like, that just doesn't
actually
make sense.
I refuse to believe that there are that many people in government who don't understand that they're misusing the word progressive.
Of course they know. They're not all
that
dumb.
I believe that there are maybe too many Hillary supporters that misunderstood the word progressive.
Yes.
Too many.
But Hillary would tell you privately that she was a moderate.
Privately,
I mean,
Hillary Clinton knows she's a moderate. She's a smart lady.
The Clintons built their careers on, like, inventing moderate Democrats. Like,
Bill was the president of the Democratic Leadership Conference, which was basically a plan to bring moderate republicanism to the Democratic Party.
Right.
He knows he's a moderate. Hillary Clinton would call herself a centrist. She's not a fool.
Yeah.
She knows politics. She doesn't know how to run an election, you know, run a campaign.
Yeah.
But she understands where she stands.
Yeah.
And this is the same with, you know, anyone who's asking Bernie Sanders whether Ossoff is a progressive. They know that he's not.
Right. So don't let these fools trick you.
No.
By the way.
And if you are a progressive and you can come up with a better word than progressive to describe what we all are.
Yeah.
That we know intrinsically is different than being a centrist.
Right.
Then tweet it at us. We'd love to hear.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
In any case, drama.
Oh, my. Yes.
This
Jason
week.
Chaffetz.
Jason Chaffetz on Wednesday. And again, he's the chair of the House Oversight Committee who was desperate to investigate Hillary Clinton's emails for the next 4 years.
Of course.
Is not seeking re-election in 2018.
Yeah.
He said he had no ulterior motives, but that he's ready to return to the private sector, which is hilarious because then on Thursday, he told a radio station in Utah that he might not even finish his term.
Yeah.
But no ulterior motives, of course.
No.
That would never...
No.
Anyway, naturally people are speculating about what the cause of all this was.
Yes.
He was forced to clarify to the Wall Street Journal and said, if I do step down early, it will be months from now. It's hard for people to believe. I really do want to be with my family more. Maybe it's more of a midlife crisis than anything else.
Right.
But obviously he doesn't want to be with his family that much because
He just got reelected, by the way.
And he also told Politico, I started poking around to see what I might be worth and what sort of possibilities are out there. And I got a series of, let us know when you're serious. Well, now I can say, can you tell I'm serious? It'll take a little bit more time to sort out. I'd be thrilled to have a television relationship, but there's a number of things I'd like to do. So he wants a show on Fox.
Right.
That's translation for everyone. He wants a show on Fox. That's not the same as spending time with your family and having a midlife crisis.
No.
He also hasn't ruled out running for office in the future.
Well, he's not that old.
And he's also said in past interviews that he wants to be the governor of Utah. So that's what people thought he would leave after when they thought he wasn't when they thought he was going to finish out his term as he was entrusted by the people of Utah to do.
Yeah.
They thought he would leave maybe to pursue the governorship in Utah.
Yeah.
But he insisted he's not leaving due to any scandal. He said, absolutely, positively not in any way, shape or form. I've been given more enemas by more people over the last 8 years than you can possibly imagine. From the Secret Service to the Democratic Party, I am who I am. If they had something really scandalous, it would have come out a long, long time ago.
Mm.
Well, that
sounds
was
like a man who is
sounds
about
like a man
to
who
have
has,
a scandal come out.
Just like that man. Sounds like a man who wants to exit stage left before scandal enters stage right.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
He loses any credibility and doesn't get his show.
Yeah.
But there's also the chance that he just doesn't find life as exciting or worth living now that he can't investigate
Hillary
Clinton's emails.
Or he's realized that working in the House is never going to
pan out to anything.
Right.
He doesn't think that the Trump investigations are as fascinating and
No.
You know, exciting as the Clinton investigation into her emails would have been.
No.
He was really looking forward to going through every State Department email from her tenure with a fine-tooth comb.
Yes.
And final state representative news.
God, get out of here. Retire.
Diane
Feinstein. Let me never see your face again.
Here's
two
things.
Feinstein.
One is that she's 83. So if she runs for re-election, which she has not ruled out in 2018, she will be 90 when her term finishes.
Correct.
She's going to die in office. And I don't want to deal with that.
No.
It's nicer to the people of California. You've served your time.
Yes.
Like, enough, too much of your time. Yeah. Give the people of California a chance to update. Because when you were elected to serve California, it was a different state.
It was.
It was the state that Ronald Reagan became the president after being the governor of.
Yeah.
It was a state where moderate Republicanism and the dream of owning a tire company sprawl nonsense city, you know, a house that was 75 miles away from your office through terrible traffic, was just beginning.
Right.
Now it's a state filled with lefties who are sick of their damn traffic, want some public transportation options, and want some fucking healthcare.
Right.
And you are standing in our way of getting it.
Yes.
And we can't even tell you that because the phone lines to your office are literally always jammed. And that's because you never are on the right side of anything.
Right. That's, the last time that we had to dial your jammed phone lines was to remind you that Jeff Sessions is a racist asshole.
Yeah.
Which,
you should have known.
A coworker of his should have been, like,
well aware of.
Known to you. Yeah.
I'm sure you could also have attested to him being a misogynist.
Sure.
Because you're one of the first women to serve in the Senate.
Say, I would have, I can't imagine that she hadn't been on the receiving end of that at least once.
I cannot.
If not more than, you know.
A thousand times.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
But in any case, she has been holding town halls around California. Yes. And she's been getting a lot of flack from the audience. Because, I mean, among other things, you know, she's a little too warmongery for everyone's taste.
She is. Always has been.
Yeah, that's, you know, there's she's a little bit too kind of like pussyfooting around the idea of investigating Russia's ties to our election.
Yeah.
But mostly, she's against Medicare for All.
Yes.
Against it, you guys.
Big time.
Like, big time against it, Joe Manchin style against it.
Yeah.
Ben Nelson, who literally took the public option away from us, against it.
Right. She's not there.
She's not there.
Nope.
And at 83, I just don't see her getting there. One of her staff
I don't either.
Said, oh, an emergency's happening in our sound studio. one of her staff said that when she got reamed out, because there were a lot of loud boos after, this was in southern LA, when she said that she's not in favor of single-payer healthcare, said that they would argue that the far left of this audience was far smaller than the audience as a whole. The squeaky wheel will always get greased. More emergencies.
Oh my gosh. Coming. A bigger one.
A big emergency.
Yikes.
This is, it's because it's 1,000 degrees today and we had to keep the windows open. Normally we close the windows when we record, but not when we're dying of heat like this.
No.
In any case, the squeaky wheel always gets greased. That's what I saw here. The resistance, as it's called. And if you, by the way, are a Democrat who is positioning yourself in opposition to the resistance, then get out of office.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
They've become more sophisticated, more organized, better organized.
You could see that in the crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could.
You could, because people are really fucking pissed off.
Pissed at
and they're
you.
Hoping that the representative that they elected to represent their needs will
start
do that.
Doing so.
Yeah.
Yes. But she's not
now. She's not doing that.
No.
She says that her whether or not she runs is dependent on several family health issues.
Oh, God.
Like, who is in her family right now? That with
is
the
she like John McCain, where she has like a 174-year-old mother or something like that? That's
probably.
Still alive?
I mean, she's still kicking around the Senate in 83. I don't see why her mother wouldn't still be alive.
Right.
I feel like this is what happens with these people. She's like a super ager.
Right.
She's been wearing the same haircut since 1952.
Yeah.
And she's going to die in that haircut in 2034. Right.
In the Senate.
Right. Still staunchly opposing everyone's basic right to health care.
Let's get a primary going against her, guys.
Like seriously, let's primary
let's
her out of
her.
This shit.
Come
I can't
on.
With this anymore.
Like, let's get into it.
I feel like...
Like if the far right can do it, like, let's get on that.
There are times when I'm reminded that the one truly bipartisan issue out there is term limits. And this is one of those times that I would like to say, let's impose them.
Right. On her.
On her.
Immediately. Yeah.
Give this seat a chance to evolve with the state that it represents.
Yes.
I mean, for God's sakes.
Really.
In any case.
Grim.
Gossip.
This is good. So good.
Bill O'Reilly,
actually
perpetrator
fired.
Of tons and tons of sexual harassment, was actually fired by Fox this week.
Ooh, buddy.
And this is a big deal because he was their most lucrative show.
It was the highest rated. We told you last week about like how all the advertisers were dropping out. But his viewership was still up. So
it
we
increased.
Were like, oh, somebody.
His viewership increased after the scandal. And this is because partially the New York Times was who broke this scandal.
Right.
And nothing O'Reilly viewers hate more than the Times.
The Times, right. And Trump was like, you know, said that he shouldn't have settled and talked about how great and wonderful he was. So that was probably helpful as well.
But what wasn't helpful was the fact that Roger Ailes only 9 months ago was... given the boot for the exact same thing.
Yeah, right.
So this is...
Oh, Fox News.
Just...
Never change. Except
change
immediately.
Yeah. Tucker Carlson is taking over his slot. And Tucker Carlson is just where they shove. That's who they shove at all of the empty seats.
Yeah.
In the Fox.
Yeah.
You know.
He's terrible as well.
He took over for Megyn Kelly.
They weren't going to hire a good person, obviously.
Well, no, I mean, that
wasn't their plan.
No, but he wears a bow tie, you guys.
Yeah, he does.
He's really terrible.
A goofy one, too. Not like, you know, bow ties are sort of like...
No, not like Mr. Big.
To be like wearing right now, but like not the Tucker Carlson brand of bow ties.
No. But so, in any case, some facts about Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
Did you know that he is also a prolific writer of nonfiction?
Amazing.
Including the Killing historical series, where he writes novels, I mean, he writes nonfiction books about assassinations and assassination attempts.
Yeah.
Including Killing Lincoln and Killing Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like bestsellers.
Yeah. You want to know who's read these?
No, that's not what I've read.
Oh, that's not the one you've read.
That's not the one I've read.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I'm getting ahead of us.
He has memoirs. He has several memoirs, one of which urges people to treat women respectfully.
Sure.
But no, I have read his only piece of fiction.
Oh, fiction, right, yes, of course.
Fiction writing.
Sorry, yes.
Which is a novel about a murderous, out-of-work reporter and TV anchor
yes.
who seeks retribution on the former colleagues that destroyed his
career. Yeah, I love it.
He writes himself as Shannon Michaels, reads as 40s-ish, disgraced news anchor.
Yeah.
He's formerly a correspondent for the Global News Network, and he loses his temper with this other reporter in Argentina while covering the Falklands War. Now, we know that Bill O'Reilly has lied about the extent of his reporting in Argentina at the dawn of the Falklands War.
I forgot about that.
And that's where this story begins.
Yes.
And what does this character do but murder the guy that steals the story from him?
Yes.
And then murders another guy who was there.
Sure.
And then goes on a serial killing spree, murdering everyone who's ever harmed him in his career.
Yeah.
Now, important notes. One of which is that his character dies in a hilarious accident where he leads police on a chase to the Fort Lauderdale airport at night and then tries to outrun a landing plane, and his car gets clipped by the plane. The plane crashes and his car is ignited in the blowback and he burns to death in an overturned car.
No.
While the people chasing him watch.
Nope.
But I just thought I would read the notes that I wrote.
Right, you had to read this for work.
I had to read this for work. I wrote coverage on it. I just thought I would read the first paragraph of my never-published notes on Bill O'Reilly's Those Who Trespass.
Mm.
Those Who Trespass paints a dark picture of network broadcast news that can feel a little overblown in its message that the slow death of, quote, real reporting is somehow worthy of the outcome here, i.e. four murders.
Sure.
The book just doesn't condemn its antagonist quite enough. It feels a bit like a fantasy piece for a bitter Bill O'Reilly who was wrong during his stint reporting in Argentina and dreams of murdering all the people that caused his network career to unravel. It's a little hard to take the drama seriously as a result. Though there's nothing about Shannon Michaels that makes him sympathetic, it's hard to shake the feeling that O'Reilly wants us to consider his mission a righteous one.
Amazing.
This is a book where he fantasizes about murdering all the people he's ever worked with.
God, Gretchen Carlson, better watch out.
I know. I was like...
Isn't she one of, she's one of the people who sued him, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, Gretchen Carlson, better watch out. Those New York Times reporters, better watch out. And whoever he based the character of Ron Costello on,
but at least,
better watch
at
out.
Least, at least he'll die in the end.
Exactly.
Oh,
in an exciting police chase. So in any case, that's the Bill O'Reilly. That's what comes from Bill O'Reilly's imagination. By the way, this book was real low stakes because normally in like a thriller like that, you want to be like either who's the murderer or that he has a righteous mission and you're sort of torn about that, or that he's just coming up with ingenious ways to murder everyone. Right, none of these are true in this situation. It's all just like ridiculous, unlikely murders. You know he's guilty the entire time, so there's no suspense. So instead, you're just watching police fumble as he commits the most ridiculous murders in the world and then dies in a plane crash.
It's amazing.
They never even catch him. In any case.
Oh, that is not going to make a great movie if the rights have been bought.
I strongly encourage that they not be.
Okay, good.
In any case.
So at least it won't be coming from UTA.
We can only hope. I can't speak to what decisions are made by people in my absence.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I can only do what I can do. No, this was time we had acquired a news agency. An agency that reps news personalities. And so we had to read Glenn Beck books.
Oh, man.
There were so many books that had to be read by so many famous television personalities.
Nope.
Some of which were reasonable people. others of which were not.
Yeah. Yikes.
I'll leave you to guess which one I thought Bill O'Reilly was.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And on that, I bid you farewell. We'll be back next week.
Yes,
we will. The 100 days will be over.
Yeah.
So if the world doesn't end, we'll see you on Sunday.
That's right.
Bye.